We have a volunteer at our house. Every year around Christmas, these grow. We never planted them, but they show up. Something metaphorical in that. Something about the eternal truths of Easter. I'm more interested at our great occasions at truths rather than the facts of the story. Whether the Red Sea parted, it was an earthquake, it was a tidal wave, the Egyptians drowned in a tsunami, the body came out of the ground at Easter, or grave robbers took it. Whether there were five loaves and two fish, and the loaves were really huge loaves, or they sliced it really, really fine, most of those issues of fact are interesting, but the truths are much more important to me than the facts. Easter is one of those wonderful, nearly universal holidays and holy days that celebrates things that are true about human beings and about our relationship to nature, to mortality, and most frighteningly of all, of course, to our own mortality. At Unitarian Universalist ministers are always given a huge challenge because, number one, it's to talk at a holiday that recurs every year and say something new and original. I gave that up some time ago because if you get too new and too original, it's not Easter. The other is to do what Garrison Keillor accuses us of doing, and that is doing a botany lecture and doing anything but talking about him. I will do the botany lecture, and I will talk about him. The botany lecture and the cultural anthropology is important. We celebrate life and rebirth in Judaism and in Christianity in the spring when the world comes back to life. We celebrate our faith in the return of the light in the fall, at the edge of winter, or in the case of Christmas, in actual winter. That Hanukkah, this lighting lights against the darkness, is symbolic. The story does not have to be factual. In fact, the story of Hanukkah shows up 300 years after whatever happened. And some of the lore of Christmas shows up 300 years after what actually happened. But the truths are more important than the facts. The truth is that in the winter, as the days grow cold and dark, we get frightened. And our festivals of light, both before the solstice and after, are affirmations that spring will come, that depression will lift, that the apparent death of animals, of plants, of flowers, that those flowers, those plants will come back to life. The Psalms compare us to the grass. We grow in the morning, we flourish at noon, we wither in the afternoon and are cut down, and the grass comes back. Those winter festivals are promises of the spring. And then in the spring, there are great celebrations of birth and rebirth. As I spoke last week about the Passover being a birth story from darkness through a squeezed place into the bright lights and being taken care of, rebelling, and having lives. Easter is a celebration of life. It looks at death's final decree and says, something else happens. Now, you are free as Unitarian Universalists to believe in whatever else you want to believe, but what is inarguable is that what we do in this world makes a difference. Makes a difference today to each other, makes a difference to future when we are remembered, makes a difference even when we are not remembered. The strongest case for that this morning is Norbert Chapek. My guess is that in most Unitarian Universalist congregations, there's probably a flower communion. And very little is known about Norbert Chaitka. He created it. It's his legacy. It lives on, even if we don't remember his name. It's better to remember his name, but the truth is in the flower and in the custom and what we do. It's better if we know that he fought for civil rights, for equal rights, for political rights, for religious freedom. It's better if we know that he was taken away by the Nazis for high treason of preaching unapproved sermons. It's better, though tragic, that we know that he was exterminated by gas during the Holocaust, as were other Unitarians, as were obviously Jews, as were gay people, as were leftists. And Norbert Chapek is a hero. And it's better to know all of that. But even not knowing it, if we carry on this flower communion from generation to generation, we prove the truth of Easter, the truth beyond the facts. I had a great theologian as a professor, Christian theologian, Ed Hobbs. He was a Catholic, he was an Episcopalian priest. And his view was kind of esoteric. He believed that Jesus lived, that he died, that his body stayed in the ground. And I raised my hand and said, "Father, forgive me, but am I a Unitarian? Or am I an Episcopalian, or are you a Unitarian?" And he said, no, I relate to a story, to a history, to a tradition, and to me, resurrection is not about the body, it's about the spirit. That whoever Jesus was 2,000 years ago, that story, that spirit, those truths are still around to touch people's hearts, to inspire people, to give people hope, to change their lives. This seems to me to be inarguably true. I don't need a Christology. I don't need a literal belief to know that the people in the past, the great religious figures, the great secular figures, however we understand them, are like our parents, our friends, those whom we have personally lost. They're available to us to hear them, to be touched by them, to be inspired, that the truths that they committed in their lives come to us from generation to generation. Last year, in the middle of a sermon, so for those of you who are keeping score, I am repeating myself, but I'm only repeating from 1 year, not from 42. I had an epiphany. A religious epiphany during a sermon. Now, that almost never happens, either to a congregation or to the person who's speaking. But this happened to me. It's one of the advantages of preparation and of working in real time. And that was that for 42 years, every time I had done a committal service at a graveyard, I would say to people, "We come to pretty places to remember that we are a part of, not apart from nature. We want to be a part of the cycle of nature. But your loved one does not live in the grave. Your loved one is not in a coffin or in a box. Your loved one is in your hearts, in your lives, in your minds, in all of the people whom they touched." And in the middle of the sermon, I went, "Whoa! Easter. The tomb is empty." Of course. Why didn't I get it before? Because you can't predict when epiphanies are going to hit. And tragically, how long they last when they are epiphanies. But why didn't I get it before? Of course the tomb was empty. Of course he wasn't in there. He was available to followers. Available in the exemplary life he lived, available in his teachings, available in the Spirit as part of the Spirit of life, and is not part of the grave. That, at the minimum, is our future. Whatever else there is theologically, at minimum, our homes, our eternal homes, are not those so-called eternal resting places. I know that my parents' resting place is in here, in my children, in my grandchildren, in all of the people whom they touched, whose lives they influenced for good, sometimes not for good, who remember them sometimes consciously, and like Norbert Chapek, sometimes not consciously. We don't, in fact, have to be remembered for the buzz, for the sound, for the bell to keep echoing in history, to be a part of life and the spirit of life. What we can do is be mindful that what we do, we say this now about the internet, what's on the internet is more or less forever. But so is everything else. How we touch each other, how we treat each other, how we react to light and to life and to love, these are eternal gifts we give each other with a generosity of spirit, with a mindfulness that our lives make a difference, that our lives continue like the sound of a bell, like the ripples that a stone thrown in a still pond make. They ripple out beyond anyone's ability to see or to hear. It doesn't matter that what gets built gets destroyed. It matters that it is built. It matters that people take strength and inspiration from what we do. It matters that we are the conduits of history. As somebody who works in the religion business, I'm frequently queried, sometimes aggressively, about issues of belief. How can you believe this? How can you believe that? It's not about belief. It's about what we do. It's about what we transmit. It is about how we each run a lap from generation to generation, taking what our forebears gave us, whether familial or historic or national or congregational, and advancing the cause during our lifetime with our efforts and handing it off from generation to generation. If people want to know what religion does, it expands our lives. You don't have to believe in a future life, though it's pretty instinctual. Our middle grandson said, you know, if there's an afterlife, then Grandma Booby Betty is up in paradise cooking and wondering if you've collected the rents. He got her. He nailed her. It's kind of instinctive, but he was smart enough even at 10 to say, if. He's not sure. It's a good and humble position. But we transmit who we are from generation to generation. That's what religion does. That I know that there were people who came before me, who struggled before me. And whether I go back to the savannas of Africa or to the primordial sea or to Eastern Europe, I'm part of a story. I didn't get here alone, and it wasn't just my parents or my grandparents. It goes all the way back. I have a long history way before my birth. And through what I do, through what we do, we have a history beyond our deaths as our parents and grandparents and great-grandparents continue through us. So we continue through what we do with each other, for each other today. The example that we set for our children, the love that we give to to our children, our grandchildren, and those children that are not even biologically ours, but who experience us and are a part of our hearts, and that our lives are a part of them. So instead of just being, at minimum, a flash, a brief, miraculous flash of consciousness, and that is enough already to celebrate, between two eternities of darkness, whatever else I may believe, this flash is not alone. It joins with other flashes in the past and other flashes in the future and makes a continuous beam from the darkness to the light, a light that we create with our lives, with our consciousness, with our mindfulness. That is the essential truth of Easter. That's the essential truth of spring. We carry this memory forward in many traditions, and it's one of the reasons we do ethnic breads. We do it through cooking. There are holidays that if you don't cook this, you are breaking faith with your tradition. I remember an absolutely inedible stuffing that my first mother-in-law made, and she knew it was inevitable. Inedible, and both inevitable and inedible, and the entire family knew it was inevitable and inedible, and it had to be made every Thanksgiving. And you took your life in your hands because it was like eating gravel, but they had done it forever. And I have been in many houses where somebody will say, well, we eat this every year. We don't particularly like it, but it's part of our tradition. It's how we go on from generation to generation. There are things that we eat at Thanksgiving, things that we eat at Passover, not all of which we love, but it is a kind of communion, a kind of communion with the past and a gift to the future. Things that make us know that however precious this moment is, however beautiful it is to be together, it's not isolated. It's part of something long and complex that goes l'dor v'dor from generation to generation, from time to time. It's not magic. It's not superstition. It is much more important, as Tevye said, it is tradition. And that's what we are. We're creatures of tradition. The traditions are not magic in and of themselves. When we bring a mindfulness and memory to it, when we understand our connection to our past and to our future, when we understand the miracle of this moment, the miracle of dead plants turning back to life, blooms appearing, flowers popping out of nowhere each spring that brightens our day and gives us inspiration to brighten each other's day, then we have found not the facts, they're interesting, but not terribly intrinsically important. We have found the truths, the essential truths of Easter. Happy Easter.